Blog Talk Radio.
I'm your host, Paul Gann, and for the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, you will get a heavy dose of my opinion. If you have an opinion, your number is to call 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgann. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgann. You can send email messages to the show, goforward.gann@gmail.com. That's goforward.gann@gmail.com. Hope everybody had a great week. Hope you enjoyed your week, and now hope you're enjoying your weekend. And for those with significant others, I hope you're enjoying your Valentine's weekend, and hopefully you have something planned for your significant other, whether it be a movie, dinner, and what have you. I don't know what you like to do, but if that's what you like to do, make sure you do it well and do it right. Expected to be joined by one of the heroes of Super Bowl 45 for the Green Bay Packers, Howard Green. Howard made a big play in Super Bowl 45, caused Ben Roethlisberger to throw an errant pass, which was picked off by Nick Collins, which led the Packers. Nick Collins would eventually score from 37 yards out, and the Packers would be up 14-0 at that time. But we're expected to be joined by Howard Green. He would join us in the 2 o'clock hour. And also, 2011 Hall of Fame finalist Willie Rofe will come on by. Willie's going to talk about the Super Bowl, and Willie's also going to talk about how he feels about not being a part of this class of the Hall of Fame, the 2011 class of the Hall of Fame. And we'll definitely get Willie's take on that, and definitely get Willie's take on the Super Bowl. And speaking of the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 45, which was played in Dallas, a snowy, icy, just a mess out there in Dallas. And the Super Bowl was played out there in the dome that Jerry built, Cowboy Stadium, big, beautiful stadium, big crowd, 100,000+. And so everybody was there to enjoy the sights and sounds of the Super Bowl, but everybody was also there to see Aaron Rodgers continue to do what Aaron Rodgers has done throughout these playoffs. I mean, if you look at Aaron Rodgers in this game, they he was superb in this game, throwing for over 300 yards and 3 touchdowns, and he was big. He was big, and this Packer team throughout this whole season stepped up. I mean, they just stepped up and have stepped up throughout this whole season. They lost their top running back, Ryan Grant, week one. They lose Nick Barnett. I mean, they lose Donald Driver, Charles Woodson, and Sam Shields in the Super Bowl. But somehow, some way, they kept it going, and they kept doing what they've done throughout this whole season, and that's fight, fight, and fight. And in that fight, they ultimately would take this Super Bowl and give a lot of credit to it. Let's go back to Aaron Rodgers now. I mean, he's the guy that couple years ago when the whole situation with Brett Favre, was he coming back, wasn't he coming back? Now he wanted to be a Packer. He wanted to come to training camp, but Ted Thompson made a decision. He decided to go with Aaron Rodgers. He decided to go with A-Rod, as he's been affectionately called by some. He decided to go with Aaron Rodgers. And in going with Aaron Rodgers, he made the decision that, guess what? This guy is a guy who's going to help us help our franchise moving forward. He sat on the bench for 3 years, and he's ready to go now. He's ready to go. He was in the bullpen, if you will, for 3 years, and now he's ready to go. And Aaron Rodgers makes Ted Thompson look like a genius, makes Ted Thompson look very good. And the way he played in the Super Bowl, and the way he has played in these playoffs. And if you look at the game, the Green Bay Packers jumped out to an early 21-3 lead, and it looked like at one point you're saying to yourself, this may not be close. This may be a blowout. The way the Packers just jumped on the Pittsburgh Steelers in this game. I mean, they jumped on them. They jumped on them quick, and they jumped on them fast. And they drove down the field on their one drive and ultimately hit Jordy Nelson for 29 yards out. That made it 7-0. And that was a part of a 9-play, 80-yard drive. And Jordy Nelson made a beautiful catch from 29 yards out. And he was effective in the game. Jordy Nelson did his thing in this game. A lot of big plays, 9 catches, 140 yards for Jordy Nelson. And then you get the big interception by Nick Collins, which was forced and caused by a man who will be joining us today, Howard Green. Got pressure on Ben Roethlisberger. Big Ben couldn't step into that throw. And ultimately was picked off by Nick Collins. Nick Collins returned to 37 yards. And guess what? The Green Bay Packers are up 14-0 at that point. And if you're a Steelers fan, you have to be nervous there. You have to be nervous there, being down 14-0. But oh wait, it got worse. It got worse. Packers drove down the field again. 21 yards, strike from Rodgers to Greg Jennings. And at that point, it is now 21-3. 21-3, and you're saying to yourself, wow, wow, this may not be close. This may be a blowout, but you know what? You also thought in the back of your mind, this is Ben Roethlisberger. This is the Pittsburgh Steelers. This is a team that's fought hard throughout this whole season. You knew they were going to go away quietly, and they did not go away quietly as they came back in that second half and started to make some things happen for themselves and ultimately got themselves right back into the football game and getting themselves back into the football game, and they got the big touchdown before the end of the half, and then which made it 21-10, and they came out and they called it. They made the score 21-17 in that third quarter. And at that point, you're thinking this team is coming hard, and you know what? Maybe they're on their way back. When they made it 21-17, and then the fumble, the big fumble by Mendenhall. That changed the course and the complexion of this football game. The fumble by Mendenhall, which led to a Packers touchdown, and that fumble was big. I mean, that was a big fumble, and you got the sense the Steelers were coming, and they were coming hard, and they were coming, and they were coming. And then the big fumble, and that fumble was big. That fumble was big, and then after that, Rodgers hit Jennings from 8 yards out. That made it 28-17. Steelers came back. Mike Wallace, long touchdown catch. That made it 28-25 after they hit the two-point conversion. Packers come back, kick a field goal, make it 31-25 at that point. And then you're saying to yourself, okay, now Big Ben has an opportunity. Didn't play well in this Super Bowl. Really did not play well in these playoffs. But he was a guy who masked that inability that he's played with in these playoffs by some of the plays that he's made down the stretch. I mean, he hasn't played well, but when it was money time, Big Ben has stepped up. He stepped up when it was money time. And he stepped up against the Ravens when it was money time. He stepped up against the Jets when it was money time. He was money. When it was time to be money, Big Ben was money. But in this particular game, he threw 2 interceptions, one which was returned for a touchdown. And that was big. I mean, that was a big play. That was a big, big play there. And again, Howard Green, the guy who helped set that up, will be joining us, and he'll talk about it. But that was a big play there. Big play. And at that point, the Steelers were down 14-0. And at that point, it was going to be an uphill battle for them. And it was an uphill battle, and they never got over that hill, never got over the hump, if you will. But again, they had an opportunity. I mean, there's no other quarterback you would want with the ball 2 minutes left and an opportunity to get it done. Big Ben had the ball. He's been here before on this stage. He's done it on this biggest stage, and that's the Super Bowl. He's done it before on this stage. He had an opportunity on this big stage to do it again, and he couldn't do it. Green Bay Packers stepped up defensively. Ultimately, the Green Bay Packers would force the Steelers on downs. Big Ben had one final shot, threw it to Mike Wallace. Was some contact, no call, incomplete pass. Green Bay Packers, Super Bowl 45 winners, and a world champions, 2010 world champions. And this was a team that, again, I said last week, Beyonce, Kelly, and Michelle had nothing on this Destiny's Child. This was Destiny's Child. This was a team that, again, week 16 and week 17, win and you're in, but lose and you're out. But guess what? They won those two games, beat the Giants and beat the Bears, and they were a 6 seed. And they knew at that point, you're a 6 seed. You have to go through Philadelphia. You're going to have to go through maybe Atlanta. And they did go through Atlanta. And then you would have to go through Chicago. So they went through Philly, got it done. Big interception by Tremont Williams. That sealed that game. They go into Atlanta. Big performance by Aaron Rodgers. Put up big numbers, over 300 yards, 3 touchdowns. They beat the Falcons. Kind of blew the Falcons out. Basically blew the Falcons out. And then they go into Chicago, their arch nemesis, their arch rival, a team that they hate, and the Bears hate them too. And guess what? They find a way to get it done. They beat the Bears in Soldier Field. Aaron Rodgers, not one of his better performances, but the defense stepped up there and made the plays for the Green Bay Packers to ultimately get to the Super Bowl. And they get to the Super Bowl, lose Woodson, lose Driver, lose Shields, and guess what? End result, they still win. They still get it done. The Green Bay Packers were Destiny's Child. Again, they were like Beyonce. They were like Michelle. They were like Kelly. They were Destiny's Child. And nothing, nothing was going to stop this team. And nothing did not stop this team. You lose Jermichael Finley, the big tight end. You lose Ryan Grant, their big running back. You lose Nick Barnett. And guess what? They still kept coming, and they ultimately got to the playoffs as a 6 seed. And when they got into the dance, they took advantage of it. They took advantage of it. They made plays on the road. They did what they had to do on the road, and ultimately they got to the Super Bowl, and it continued. The Green Bay Packers were Destiny's Child, and nothing, I mean nothing, was going to stop them. Now let's get the thoughts of one of 2011 Hall of Fame finalists, an 11-time Pro Bowl offensive tackle, Willie Roby. Willie, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good, Jeremy. And I'll tell you what, Mike McCarthy did an excellent job. And I'm going to tell you what they did have that helped him play consistent all year. I think it started up front on both sides of the ball. That I think even though Chad Clifton, they said his knees and stuff, the offensive line did an excellent job this year for Green Bay, and the defensive line came to play. And, you know, it was going to be hard for me to bet against Mike McCarthy, his first offensive coordinator job. Well, I told you guys, was with us in New Orleans. And the same thing happened when we were 10-6, and we won that first playoff game and knocked out the Super Bowl champs, but we lost Jeff Blake, if you guys remember. We lost Ricky Williams, and we had running back by committee. And we lost Joe Horn in the playoff game. And Willie Jackson stepped up and had a great playoff game. And we protected the quarterback well. And we ended up knocking out the Super Bowl champs. And that was Mike McCarthy, who was our offensive coordinator. So Mike McCarthy and using personnel and being able to do the things he does just didn't start this year. It started a long time ago. He did an excellent job with our team, but went through a lot of injuries.
And Willie, talk about Mike McCarthy and what he meant to the Green Bay Packers. You talked about his ability when he was with you in New Orleans to find ways to get things done, and he found a way to get the Packers through.
He did. He's such a good. I think the best thing about McCarthy is he utilizes personnel great. And when you have a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers that can spread the ball around and keep the defense off their toes, because you know nobody knew that kid Nelson was going to do what he was going to do in the Super Bowl, but them.
Right.
They knew that they were going to be the go-to guy. And if he had dropped a couple of those balls, he might have 200 yards receiving. But, you know, he was the guy that they were going to go to and spread the defense out and make those good plays, especially when they spread the defense out and went at the right corner over the top and Nelson made a couple big catches. I mean, that was by design. And the way he spread the ball and moved the ball around, I mean, it just – it was masterful, but you have to have a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers to be able to do the job that they were doing, and you got to protect the quarterback. And I give a lot of credit to that offensive line because they did a real good job this year protecting him and keeping it going without the star running back and losing some guys. And like I said, you lost Nick Barnett, who was one of your defensive leaders on the defense side of the ball too.
And were you surprised how easy it looked for the Green Bay Packers to move the ball up and down the field? And like you said, I mean, it could have been even more if there wasn't so many drops in this game.
I was surprised at what they set out to do and Pittsburgh not being able to contain them. That's what I was surprised at. And I was surprised that Pittsburgh just looked a little flat. You know, Big Ben's foot, you could tell noticeably that he was not feeling as well. And then you had the course of all these little injuries, well, some big injuries that happened in the course of that game, which happened to Driver and Charles Woodson and some of those guys. And you look at it, I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, they're talking about going to 18 games, and look at these guys getting hurt in the Super Bowl, or guys that were hurt, and Big Ben had already missed four games during the year. So I was surprised that Pittsburgh just didn't look like they were in tune, and they looked like they were a step slower, and so that did surprise me that you know it looked like Pittsburgh was going to try to make a run to get back in the game, but when they turned the ball over and do that pick six, that was it, and no any team in the Super Bowl that's thrown a pick six, I think they're 0-10. Is that right, Jeff? 0-10 in games.
And if you look at it, Willie, with Ben Roethlisberger, the man really hasn't had a great playoff. I mean, if you look at the Ravens game, didn't play that well in that game, made the play when it was time to make plays. If you look at the Jets game, again, not a good performance there. And in the Super Bowl, like you said, it looked like he was hurting, and he was shaking in the Super Bowl, and that pick six was big. And being down 14-0, it was an uphill battle for them, but talk about Big Ben and his play throughout these playoffs.
Yeah, Big Ben didn't look as polished this year. I mean, Big Ben is always known to be elusive and to make, you know, what he does, he moves around in that pocket after everything breaks down, and then he'll make a play down the field. I think him and that receiver, Mike Williams, the young guy, I think they were on the same page, and part of that I blame Jimmy is the fact that he didn't have Antonio Holmes, and he didn't have some of those guys he could go to when he got in the bind. You know, he had Hines Ward, but I mean his big play down the field guys was a young guy that hadn't been on that stage before, and Antonio Holmes bailed him out. You know when he played in the Super Bowl, they bailed him out. So I think him not having the same receiving core and him missing those first four or five games caught up with him some in the playoffs, because when you play in the playoffs, you're going to play against some outstanding defense, and I think that kind of caught up with him, as well as the offensive line being real banged up. Now, I will say that guard, the big guard who got his arm hit on that touchdown, on that pick six, was getting beat some in that game, and it was another play that he could have been holding on. So I think the offensive line play was the coach did an excellent job trying to patch it up, but I think that was part of the reason, too. You know, Big Ben and the linemen were getting beat some out there, and he just didn't look like he was in sync with the receivers as well as he could have been, especially in years past.
And you know offensive line play, Willie. You've done it well for many years. Did it look like the Steelers missed Pouncey in this game?
You know, I'm feeling like they missed Pouncey because when they had to move, I think they had to move the center over from the draw position, and I think that if they had Pouncey, they could have had the center playing the normal position. So they did miss Pouncey in the fact that they had another lineman on that field that hadn't had a lot of playing time, and I think I think as the course of the game took its course, it did affect the team.
Right. And now, Willie, the Steelers were down 21-3. They got back into the game. They cut it to 21-17, and it looked like they had the momentum and things were on their side. But then you had the big Mendenhall fumble, which the Packers recovered, and ultimately they would score a touchdown off of that. But how big was that fumble in this game?
That was the biggest play of the game. When Matthews hit Mendenhall, he fumbled the game. That just totally changed the momentum. They were trying to get back in the game. The momentum was swinging their way, and when he fumbled the ball, and they scored another touchdown, I think that kind of broke their back a little bit, and really gave the momentum to Green Bay. And you know, your hands have to be off to Green Bay to go in and have a game plan and go out and execute it, and then have the Pittsburgh Steelers turn the ball over three times in a Super Bowl. You just don't see that happen. So, you know, you have to talk to Green Bay for doing an excellent job. And I thought Green Bay would win the game. I didn't think that Pittsburgh would go out there and turn the ball over three times.
Talking to Willie Rowe, one of the 2011 Hall of Fame finalists, 11-time Pro Bowler. And now, Willie, as bad as the Steelers played, as bad as Big Ben played in this game, they had an opportunity. They had the ball, last drive situation. Were you thinking to yourself Big Ben would do it again?
No, not at that point. I didn't think, what did they have, one timeout, I think, left at that time period?
One timeout, yeah.
They had one timeout. They had to go 87 yards. I did not think he would be able to do it. He had been playing well all day. Well, that consistently in the playoffs and hadn't been playing. For you to make those drives, you have to have some drives going throughout the year and have had that confidence. I didn't see that in him in that game.
And now, Willie, you look at it now, the Green Bay Packers are the Super Bowl champions. But Aaron Rodgers had 110 quarterback rating throughout these playoffs, over 300 yards, 3 touchdowns in this game. At this point, can we say, or is it safe to say, or in your mind, is Aaron Rodgers the best quarterback in football?
I won't say he's the best quarterback in football. I say he's moving in that discussion. He's got to play at this level for a few years. I mean, it's just like when you talk about a guy that's, you know, the guys that are up for Hall of Fame. When you say the best quarterback in football, I got to see him do this another year, maybe him go out here and play at this level that he played at. I mean, you have guys like Tom Brady and Peyton Manning and guys like that have been doing it a long time. But he is moving up in the discussion. He does have a ring, and I will put him in the top 5 quarterbacks. I can't say he's the best quarterback in football, but I got to see if he can do this consistently with that bullseye on him. Because he's going to have a bullseye on his chest next year, and that's what makes the guys that are special. They're able to do it repeatedly for a long period of time, with knowing that they are that type of player, and he did prove it this year that he is. For right now, he did move up the ladder, but I can't say he's the best.
And Willie, you talked about this earlier in this interview, but you talked about, if we look at this game, the Steelers lost a lot of big, I mean, not the Steelers, the Packers lost a lot of big players in this game, Woodson and Driver. And you talked about the possibility of an 18-game schedule. Is it really doable? I mean, is an 18-game schedule really doable? If you look at it, you have a lot of players go down to injury this year. It seems like to me, if you have an 18-game schedule, you're going to have a lot of backups playing a lot of meaningful football.
Well, I mean, if you don't have a first-year coach and you're putting in your system and you really need the guys around there doing all that practicing and stuff in the summertime with the OTAs and all that, like starting around April, May, and have them do all that stuff, if you're going to have an 18-game schedule, you're going to cut out a couple preseason games. You're going to really have to make your players rest up in the offseason, go in the weight room and do all the lifting and running and stuff like that. You're going to have to cut out a lot of this OTAs and all this practicing without helmets and pads on during the offseason, and then bring them into camp maybe a little earlier for a few weeks, and let them start hitting camp, and let them get some hitting done at camp, and then start the preseason game. I mean, you're not going to be able to have guys doing a lot after the season's over with, because you got 18 games and then you got the playoffs. You're going to have to let their bodies rest in the offseason and not do any type of football activity for a while, because it takes too much out of you to make it through 16 games. I can't imagine going to 18 games in playoff games. That's too long.
And now, Willie, this past weekend, you were up for the Hall of Fame. You didn't make it this time around. When you found out that you weren't going to be a part of this particular class, what was your initial reaction?
I was just trying to figure out. I had my girlfriend Michelle was waiting at the airport to see, because the last flight that went to Dallas was leaving New Orleans to meet me up there. It was like at 5-6 o'clock, and I was trying to figure out whether she was going or not, and I was in California, so I could drive over and play a little blackjack and hang out. So it was a long day, because I had to wait for the show to come on like everybody else and watch the show on NFL Network. And my first reaction was I made the final 10, and I think they met for like what, 7.5 hours, and debating whether they were going to put Ed Shapley in. And you saw that I pretty much knew Marshall Dion were going to go in, but you got a guy like Shannon Sharp. I feel like he should have been a first time Hall of Famer. And Richard Dingle's got a Super Bowl ring. I know Richard well. But I've seen a football player. I mean, it's a tough call. So I was happy for the guys who made it. And I knew that they had met a long time and there had been some discussion in there, because I don't know if they've been in that room for over 7 hours before. So I know a lot of discussion went into it, and I know I was probably right there on the borderline of possibly getting into this class.
And now, Willie, see, I was under the impression that you guys would know earlier, so you guys didn't know. You guys knew once the public knew.
I didn't know anything, man, until I watched the TV show like you did. That's why I was trying to get up and drive off and do stuff, so I had to sit at home and wait around like everybody else and then wait to see if I was going to get on the flight that night, or I was going to drive over and do what I wanted to do for the rest of the day. So, yeah, because of the show and the secret ballot and everything like that, they did not call us ahead of time to let us know anything, because I guess they didn't want us to tell the media or whoever who got in, so I didn't know to either.
Okay, so when it got down to that final 10, and you were part of the final 10, did you get a little nervous at that point? Was there a little excitement there?
It was excitement, it was anxiousness, all of that. I was going through all of the most, man, I'm down to the final 10. How am I going to get in? I knew there was a possibility that I wouldn't get in. And, I talked to Paul, and saying whether you should get in this year, and some people were saying, well, whether you might not get in this year, might be next year. So in my mind, I knew that it was going to be a tough situation because of all the guys that were waiting, because I pretty much figured that Shannon Sharp or Chris Carter would get in this year. I didn't realize that Ed Sable would take a player's spot. and how that worked until, you know, that happened. So I think the fact that Ed Sable, you know, the longtime film guy, you know, deservedly of getting the Hall of Fame was up and you know, he took a spot. I didn't realize that he took one of the player spots. So when I realized that, I wasn't getting in.
And according to the Hall of Fame, four, it can be a minimum of four, the most seven, and there can only be five modern-day players. So I guess with that Sable getting in, that kind of took away a spot from a player in that particular situation. Now, when looking at everything and looking at this Hall of Fame voting, do you think that the votes of the people that who vote for this, the 44 people who are on the panel to vote for the Hall of Fame, do you think their votes should be made public?
I know there's a lot of discussion on that, and I saw some of the stuff that was said about, you know, should it be made public, and, you know, should the panel be a little more diverse or just switched up, you know, every 2 years. Guys, if I wasn't out for the Hall of Fame, then I wouldn't really be probably concerned about it. But, it's kind of the Hall of Fame and the voting is kind of secretive, and that's the way they've done it. And it seems like that's what works for them. I think it would be a little more better if they could talk about it. It just seems like that nobody, when they get done with that meeting and stuff, nobody talks about it. I mean, it just seems like, they're in the cold of silence or whatever about the voting and everything that happens in the room, and nobody really wants to talk about it, and that's the way they've already done it. And, whereas baseball announces their percentages and everything like that, so, if that's the process they want to take, maybe they can look at that, but, I mean, that's the way they've always done it. So, I mean, I really don't know why, but, I mean, if that's the way they do it, then, you know, that's the way they want to do it. I mean, it's their, the thing about it is they're voting on players that played, and, I would hope that the writers that are voting on this, you know, really know about everything that's going on and really know about these players in detail. You know, outside of somebody standing up, you know, you have somebody stand up on your behalf and tell the history of what you did. Well, I would hope these people watch and know enough about football to know in detail about the people they're voting on and what they really meant to the sport and individually. You know, and I know you people had this discussion, if somebody played on a certain defense or played on a certain line or whatever, you know, you have to look at what the player did to get to Hall of Fame worthy. Don't look at what the unit did, you know, and then you vote because they played in a certain era, they played for a certain, a certain team that was actually a football team. Just because the team was great doesn't mean, you know, they deserve to have a bunch of players in the Hall of Fame. So I do agree with some of the process, with some of the thought process of some of the people, what they had to say. And in a way, I'm just glad that I was in the position to be where I got to in that first year.
And Willie, also there has been talk about some people believing that maybe some ex-players or coaches should be on the panel. Do you agree with that?
I think people that know football, really, really know football and watch football, should have something to do with the panel. But if the people that are there are qualified, and know what they're doing and really are students of the game and watch the game, then that's fine. I mean, it just matters the situation. And like I said, it was a tough class. For them to sit up in there 7 hours. I mean, it was some diligence, and it was some people really in that room thinking about what they were doing. So, for them to take it to the point that they sat in that room and debated for that period of time, means some thought process went into it. So, as long as they went in there and they come out of there knowing what they did and voting for the people that they thought that they deserved to be in there, because of their credentials, then I have nothing to say about it.
And, well, he will be on the ballot 2012, and a lot of people have championed your cause. Jason Whitlock, one guy, championed your cause. And, Willie, I look at your situation. I mean, Anthony Munoz, first ballot Hall of Famer, great tackle for the Cincinnati Bengals, 11 Pro Bowls. Willie Rowe, 11 Pro Bowls. So, I mean, Willie, looking at that and moving forward to 2012, if there's any Hall of Fame panelists listening right now, what would be the case for Willie Rowe to be in the Hall of Fame in 2012?
Well, you know, my situation was, I get drafted in 93. You know, I'm MVP of the – my rookie, I'm MVP of the offense. We start 5-0, and then we, we went into a little bit of a – yes, we started 5-0. Our legs got a little tired. We had worked hard and finished up 8-8. You know, I moved to left tackle my second year. We picked up Jim Everett, and he throws for 4,000 yards 2 years in a row. You know, we give up 20 sacks, I think, each season. I make All-Pro 2 years in a row. And I'm NFC lineman of the year and NFC back when they had the Mackey Awards. When Dallas had some real good lines, and I get lineman of the year in the NFC 2 years in a row. In 96, you know, I get alumni lineman of the year. And 97, I had a bump in the road. Came in camp and not in the best shape. And Chuck Smith had a real good game about me, against me. And I reevaluated myself and went to Duke and went back in 98, 99 and played hard in 2000. We finally won a playoff game, and 2001 was a tough year. You know, I'm supposed to sign an extension. You know, Jim, you're supposed to sign a 3-year, $13 million extension. I had 2 years left on my contract, and try to get married and build a new house and all this stuff in New Orleans, thinking I'm gonna be here. You know, I tear my ACL and don't have surgery till the end of November. You go from, you know, 3 years, you watch real sports. You go from 3 year, $13 million to the Saints paying, which I had all the records, paying $500,000 to trade you to Kansas City. And me going there in March with a hurt knee, didn't get put in an expansion draft because they said they weren't taking anybody over 30, and they pick up Barcelli, and he, you know, your contract was guaranteed the next year if you got put in an expansion draft. And then, I get $500,000 to get traded. I get $500,000 when I pass the physical. And basically, I went to Kansas City, man, and moved in a two-bedroom apartment and had to go out there and bust my butt to get what I got. So, you know, to go back to Kansas City and play on grass and play on some outstanding offensive lines, you know, I think we had one of the better lines to play. And to play 4 years at the level I played to make another all-decade team was real special. But, You know, it was a lot of tough work, man. You know, you get humble when you go from being all pro to being traded for $500,000 and having to go out there and bust your butt to get what you got back. So, you know, I went out there and worked hard, guys. I went out there and did what I had to do to earn what I got. And got one of my teammates coming up next year, Will Shields, who was a true pro and didn't miss a game for 14 years, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with him this year, but maybe I have a chance to go in with him. So, you know, it's a lot of fun playing football, but, just like leaving Louisiana Tech, and we had one of the top programs when I was there. We were 8-3 my second year going to D1, then we were 8-1-2, and we had a tough year our senior year, but I don't think people realize when I was at Louisiana Tech, we had four guys drafted. Me, Myron Baker in the fourth round to Chicago. Artie Smith got drafted. And Doug Evans got drafted to the Green Bay Packers and ended up playing about 10 years and got a Super Bowl ring. And I think Green Bay has another, Williams, another guy from Louisiana Tech. So, you know, it's always been a work in progress, and it's always been me, working hard to get what I got. So, you know, that, you know, what I did on the football field and coming off the knee surgery, I think was a lot of hard work, and I think they had to realize that when they vote next year.
In 2012, you talked about Will Shields being on the ballot in 2012. But 2012 would seem like the year would be a good year for you to get in, because 2013, you have guys like Larry Allen and Jonathan Ogden on the ballot, and that's going to make it a little more, it's going to make it tougher. But it doesn't mean it won't happen in 2013 if it doesn't happen in 2012. But 2013 with Larry Allen and Jonathan Ogden, it looks like 2012 will be your year. It should be your year.
Well, you know, and like you said, that's left up to the voters, and you know, I mean, Larry Allen and Ogden were some very good, outstanding linemen, and deservedly so. You know, you can argue, you have the top 100 list, so. You know, just because
right.
they make the top 100 list, you want to say, well, you know, and guys played in bigger markets, you want to say, well, this guy was this good or this guy was that good. Well, what if I had a chance to play in New York? Well, I played in New Orleans in an era when we weren't as good. But, you know, for that period down there on some bad teams, you know, I was one of the better players, you know, that they looked up to on that franchise. So, you know, could I say that Larry Allen was better than Will Shields? I don't know if I can say he was stronger than Will Shields, but as far as coming to play every week, a consummate pro, Larry Allen probably had some more ability, but Will Shields was as consistent as they get as a pro. Now, you know, Jonathan Ogden, we all know how big and burly and hard it was to get around Ogden. And Ogden was an excellent football player. But I wouldn't trade, even though they played the other side, you know, playing with Will Shields, as long as I played, would play with Larry Allen. What made Larry Allen special too was that he was able to play, you know, different positions. I mean, he could play guard and tackle.
Right. And now, Willie, we know your love for the NBA and how much you love NBA basketball. And I'm looking at the standings, little Willie. Last night, the Miami Heat beat the Detroit Pistons 100-92. And guess what? They're the number one seed in the Eastern Conference right now. Tied with Boston, 39-14, both of these teams. But, excuse me, they are a half a game ahead of Boston. I read that wrong. But can you believe it, the way that the start that this team has gotten off to, that right now they're on top of the Eastern Conference?
Well, what they've been able to do is they got off to a slow start, and they put that long streak together when they won all those games. And then they had some injuries. LeBron hurt his ankle and Bosh got hurt. And then they got those guys back healthy, and they've been able to put some streak together. But I still, right now, you know, because Boston's beating them, I still got to see them, you know, beat the Boston Celtics. Because, you know, I watched Kenny and Charles talk, and they talk about, even though, you know, you got some teams you face, you know you're going to face them in the playoffs. And you want to beat them in a regular season is a certain message. And I think it's important. Let's see what the Heat can do with Boston on Sunday. Because I still think that it's going to be a tough series when the Heat play Boston because of that experience. And if they get everybody healthy and get Shaq coming off that bench, giving them good minutes, and Delonte Wilson and all those guys back, and I think they're just trying to get them up for the playoffs, it's going to be tough with the depth the Boston Celtics can have, to deal with the Miami Heat. So I think that's going to be the tough team. Can the Miami Heat get past the Boston Celtics in the playoffs?
And even to your point, if you look at the Miami Heat, they're 12-12 against teams above 500. So they're 500 when they play teams against above 500. So right now, I mean, they feasted on below 500 teams. Right now, they're 27-2 against below 500 teams. So if you look at the Miami Heat, like you said, you got to see what they do against Boston, and that's going to be a big test for this team tomorrow. And that's going to be a good game. It's going to be a very good game. But if you look at the Eastern Conference, I mean, you got Miami, Boston, Chicago, Atlanta's there, but I'm not sold on Atlanta, really. And Orlando, I mean, those are the four teams who I think legitimately could come out of the East. Miami,
you're right,
Boston,
and
Chicago, and Orlando.
Orlando, Boston, Chicago. And like you said, I think right now Chicago's still learning. Chicago's getting better every week. And Orlando... You know, Orlando's very good, but when it comes to the playoffs, you know, dealing with Boston, especially dealing with Boston, with just having Dwight Howard, the size in the middle. I mean, those guards are going to really have to step up for them. But it's going to come down, I think it's going to come down to, you know, Miami and Boston. And if Miami gets beat 0-3 in the regular season, you know, mentally, I think that's going to factor in. Now, some teams can turn out mentally just like the Jets. The Jets beat New England at home, and then they go out there and get beat real bad when I predicted them to win that game, and they come back and beat them in the playoffs. But when you get beat three times in the regular season, Jeremy, you know, mentally, does that play a factor into if we run into this team again in the playoffs?
Definitely. And out west, you know, you have the Spurs still on top of the Western Conference. You know, you have the Lakers there. And if I look out west, I'm saying three teams, Spurs, Lakers, Mavericks. I guess you can make an argument for Oklahoma City. But I like the top three in San Antonio, the Lakers, and Dallas. And I think those three are going to fight out for the Western Conference supremacy.
I agree with you. I still think it's going to be the Lakers. I like the Spurs, but I still, you know, the Lakers are playing some real good basketball. And as long as Bynum's healthy and Bynum's playing the way Bynum's playing right now, it's going to be tough to beat the Lakers in the regular season and in the playoffs. When they got Gasol and Bynum both out there, both of those seven-footers, and they got Lamar Odom's able to come off the bench and play the role he can play, that makes the Lakers real tough to deal with.
And Willie, real quickly now, we heard the story in Utah, Jerry Sloan out there for 23 years. Everyone's shocked about it. How shocked were you when you heard the news?
You know what? It was shocking because he had just signed an extension and you know, I was just thinking about it when you were talking. Earlier this year when they went down, just think about earlier this year, just a couple months ago, when they went down to Miami and beat Miami and beat Orlando, and they were playing so well, and everybody was talking about, you know, how good they were doing and talking so great about them. And for this team to turn around that fast and for Jerry Sloan to warn out and after he signs a one-year extension, it's ironic that people want to leave, but I think you know, dealing with these athletes and dealing with the egos and the players and trying to get that old school message across, maybe running some stuff that the guys want to speed up the game a little bit or whatever the case may be, but it's a tough job and. You know, I would have liked to see him finish up the year, but if it's time for him to go, it's time for him to go. And he was such a great coach, and you know, because a guy that played hard and old school. I want you to play defense and fundamentals, and for him to coach two of the Louisiana Tech boys, of Carmelo and Paul Mills out there now. You know, I really had a lot of respect for what he did, and I wish they could have gotten the ring, but. Just like New York Knicks, that guy named Michael Jordan kind of got in the way of them getting the ring when they had those real good teams.
And very well. I mean, Michael Jordan did get in the way of a lot of great players. Barkley, you talked about Ewing, you talked about Karl Malone and John Stockton. I mean, Michael Jordan got in the way of a lot of people. Willie, it's been a pleasure talking to you, sir. Not only do you know football, but you know basketball as well. But again, it was a pleasure talking to you, and wish you nothing but the best of luck, sir.
Thank you very much, man. And we'll be looking to talk some more football when it gets closer to the season, and hopefully we don't have a lockout and they can get this money situation worked out because that would really be upsetting if they couldn't come to an agreement and get this thing situated because we really need some football and it's a great sport. And, you know, like I said, it's been real good to me and my family. So I'm looking forward for them to solving that and watching some football this year.
And you think they will solve it real quickly?
I think they need to solve it. I mean, you know, nobody, it was real hurt with all the money everybody's making for them not to be able to come to an agreement to get this done.
Definitely. Willie, thank you for your time, sir.
Thank you.
Take care. Willie Rofe, 11-time Pro Bowler, 2011 Hall of Fame finalist, and a guy that not only knows football, but he can drop some knowledge on the NBA as well. So he knows a little basketball as well. So if you have any thoughts on what you heard from Willie about the Super Bowl 45, the numbers to call 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/PGANT. That's blogtalkradio.com/PGANT. And you can send email messages to the show at goforth.gant@gmail.com. That's goforth.gant@gmail.com. And Willie talked about it. We touched on it in the NBA and moving to the NBA now. The Miami Heat, guess what? Guess who is on top of the Eastern Conference? The Miami Heat. They beat the Detroit Pistons last night. I said 100-92, but it was actually 106-92. But they beat the Pistons last night in Detroit. And guess who is on top of the Eastern Conference on here today? Yes, the Miami Heat. The same Miami Heat who got off to a bad start. The same Miami Heat that many were saying around the time when they were struggling that maybe this is just not a right mix. Maybe they need to make changes. Maybe they need to trade Bosch. Maybe the Big Three should turn into the Big Two and trade Chris Bosch and add somebody else. Maybe. I mean, we heard it all. But guess what? They have moved into first place in the Eastern Conference. As bad as the start they had in this season. I mean, it wasn't an awful start, but it wasn't the start that you expected from the Miami Heat. You expected this Miami Heat team to come out and really just blow away the competition. I mean, many expected. I mean, you had Jeff Van Gundy talking about 70 wins. Obviously, that's not going to happen this year, but there was talk of 70 wins for the Miami Heat, but it didn't happen. It didn't happen. It's not going to happen, obviously. And if you look at it, back in November, I mean, they had a three-game losing streak where they lost to the Grizzlies, the Pacers, and the Orlando Magic. And that, again, at that point, a lot of people were starting to question this Big Three. We're starting to question whether this Big Three was as good as advertised. I mean, a lot of questions surrounded them. But guess what? They're on top of the Eastern Conference right now. Half a game on top of Boston. They're 39-14. They're getting it done, everybody. But guess what? 12-12 against teams above 500. They're 12-12 against teams above 500. That is something they're going to have to change. 12-12. Against teams above 500. They have a big opportunity tomorrow afternoon against the Boston Celtics to change that. Big opportunity against the Boston Celtics to change that. And we'll see how good they have become starting tomorrow. Starting tomorrow, that will give us an opportunity to see if the Boston Celtics, the Miami Heat, are the best team in the Eastern Conference, and maybe ultimately the best team in basketball. But they've seemed to hit their stride. They're on an 8-game winning streak right now. They're on an 8-game winning streak, 8 games in a row. So they're playing well. They're playing some good basketball. And I want to look at this 8-game winning streak now. They beat Oklahoma City, an above 500 team. They beat Orlando, an above 500 team. But out of the 8 games they've won in a row, 2 of them have come against teams above 500. But, to their credit, both of those games were against teams above 500. But those games were on the road, and they beat those two teams, the Orlando Magic and the Oklahoma City Thunder, on the road. So guess what? If you look at the Miami Heat, they still have a lot to prove in terms of beating teams above 500. And we have to see if this team is really real. 12-12, because teams above 500, but 27-2 against teams below 500. So they feasted on teams below 500. That's what good teams do. Good teams beat bad teams. Good teams win the games that they have to win. But now, those bad teams won't be in the playoffs. Teams like the Orlando Magic will be in the playoffs. Teams like the Chicago Bulls will be in the playoffs. Teams like the Boston Celtics, the Atlanta Hawks will be in the playoffs. So things change a little bit in the playoffs, but it should be interesting to see if the Miami Heat are really real. If they are really real, and tomorrow will go a long way in showing us and the world if this Miami Heat team is really, really real. And speaking of the NBA last night, and speaking of LeBron's former team, the Cleveland Cavaliers, guess what? The streak is over. The streak is over! The streak is over. Before last night, it was 26 up. And 26 into the loss column for the Cleveland Cavaliers. 26 up, 26 down in the loss column for the Cleveland Cavaliers before last night. Last night, they broke the streak. I mean, it would have been messy. It would have been sad. It would have been horrible, as Bill Walton likes to say. But last night, if they would have lost, they would have broke the record held by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for most losses in a row. And that was 26. But last night, a big block by J.J. Hickson, which might have been goaltending. It was close. But big play by J.J. Hickson to get the block on Baron Davis. And then in overtime, you had the big three by Antoine Jameson that put the Cavaliers up 4. And then Randy Foy could have made things interesting. Had a 3 rim out. And that would have put the Clippers down 1 and still gave them an opportunity to get back into the game. But it rimmed out. Cavaliers got the ball, made the free throws, and ultimately the Cleveland Cavaliers' 26-game losing streak, has been broken, and it is over. It is over! And you felt sorry for this Cleveland franchise. I mean, LeBron James left them in the offseason. And you knew basketball would not be the same in Cleveland for a long time. But if you looked at the crowd last night, I mean, they were into it. 20,000 strong was into that game last night. They were into that game last night. 20,000 strong at Quicken Loans Center were into it. They were into it last night. And you feel sorry for the city of Cleveland, a championship-starved city. And you feel good that they got an opportunity last night. You feel a little better or a little something about this their team. And you feel bad for guys like Byron Scott, Antoine Jameson. Byron Scott, who's everywhere he's went, has gotten it done. Jersey, two appearances in the NBA Finals in New Orleans, got his team to the playoffs. And if you look at Byron Scott, a guy who was very underrated but a very good coach, and you felt bad for him going through this situation. I mean, 26 games in a row. That, my friend, is bad. That's bad. And it can't be a lot of fun losing 26 games in a row. It cannot be a lot of fun. The second hour of Go For It starts now. Welcome to the second hour of Go For It. Again, I'm your host, Paul Gant. And in this final hour, we will be joined by one of the heroes of Super Bowl 45, and that is Howard Green. And Howard, if you remember from that game, made one of the biggest plays of the game. Nice bull rush, got pressure on Ben Roethlisberger, forced the interception. He beat Kimamoto and forced the interception. And guess what? Nick Collins returned it. And guess what? The Green Bay Packers were ultimately up 14-0. And guess what? Guess what? The Green Bay Packers would ultimately win the Super Bowl, and one of the big plays was made by none other than Howard Green. I said Kimamoto, wrong name. Excuse me, got that wrong. That was not the guy he beat on that play. Kimamoto actually played for the Redskins. Excuse me, my ignorance. But no, Howard Green made a big play in that Super Bowl. Nice bull rush. And he got it done. I mean, a great bull rush by Howard Green. And he forced Big Ben into an interception that was returned by Nick Collins. An interception that put the Green Bay Packers up 14-0. 14-0. And at that point, it was looking good for the Green Bay Packers. It was looking good for the Green Bay Packers. And give them a lot of credit. Give the Green Bay Packers and give Howard Green a lot of credit, a guy who had a tough time catching on this particular season. But he called on. And when he called on, guess what? He made the most of his opportunity. He made the most of his opportunity. And that's what it's about, making the most of your opportunity. He made the opportunity. He made the opportunity. And guess what? Green Bay Packers are the Super Bowl champions. And I thought I had this right. Somebody told me I had it wrong. It was Chris Kiamatu that he beat on that play, which ultimately led to the interception. Listen to yourself, Paul. Listen to yourself. That's what I thought. It was Chris Kiamatu that he beat on that play, which led to the interception. A lot of credit goes to Howard Green, a guy who fought, who battled, and waited for his opportunity. He got the opportunity, and he made the most of his opportunity in Super Bowl 45. Give Howard Green a lot of credit, and he will be joining us any moment now. He will be joining us shortly. We're now being joined by one of the heroes of Super Bowl 45, defensive lineman Howard Green. Howard, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Not too bad. Now, Howard, before you got to the Super Bowl, Howard, you had a whirlwind season. I mean, you were in training camp with the Redskins. You were cut before the start of the season. And you signed with the Jets. things happened there. Ultimately, you were cut by them. After you were cut by the Jets, at that point, what was going through your head?
At that time, my next move was my thoughts was my next move, and not giving up on you know my career and anything like that. I mean, I know I could play the game, and somebody would you know be in need of a defensive lineman, a veteran defensive tackle. So I just would go sit and wait patiently and see what was going on next, and I didn't have to wait too long. So got the call and made my way into Green Bay. And, man, just is all. Everything I could say from that point on was just awesome.
And Howard, I was reading the story. You actually got the call from the Packers as you were driving back from New York going to Mississippi.
Yeah, I was heading through Mississippi, heading to Louisiana. And I was about 45 minutes away from home. And my phone rang from my agent, Albert Elias. And we got the phone call and said that it was done. You know, they claimed me off the waivers, and I was a Packer, man, and I didn't, at the time, I was like, wow, it happened that fast, you know, probably within 24 hours turnaround, I was back on the team and getting ready to go play a game that Sunday.
And now, Howard, like you said, you would eventually sign with the Packers, and 2 weeks later, you were playing the Jets, the team that cut you during the season. Did you have any extra motivation in that game?
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot of motivation and, you know, as you would say, a lot of adrenaline and just, you know, things you want to just get out, a lot of bittersweet feelings, you know, because a lot of my friends are still there. You know, but I had a chip on my shoulder and, you know, I just wanted to go out there and help contribute to my team, the Packers, and we managed to pull off a 9-0 victory. Against the Jets, and it worked out. You know, it worked out the way it was supposed to. I wouldn't change anything. My journey, you know, getting cut and driving home, and having, you know, just and then signing with the Packers, and then just moving forward for that. I wouldn't change anything.
Right. And Howard, as we look at the Packers season, it was kind of an up and down season. I mean, essentially, week 16 against the Giants and week 17 against the Bears were basically playoff games for you guys.
Yeah.
Talk about the team's mindset going into those two football games.
The mindset of the team was, you know, it was like you said earlier, it was just playoff mode. You know, you had to win to get in, and once you get into the tournament, it was a new season for us. But the playoffs started 2 weeks, you know, the last two regular season games against the Giants, against Chicago, and we, you know, the veterans, the veteran guys, leadership, we all kind of, you know, made our statements to say what we had to say. There wasn't going to be much talking. We were just going to go out there and just play. As one unit, one heartbeat, we were all in. Everybody was committed to it, and whatever it took to get to that point, to reach our goals, that's what we were chasing. And it it all worked out. I mean, Coach Mike McCarthy, I mean, and Coach Don Capers, our defensive coordinator, the whole entire coaching staff, they just really they believed in us, and we believed in ourselves, and we went forward from there. It was a big jump, from us just losing the game against New England and Detroit. Those two games kind of put us in the right mind frame, I would say, from that point on.
We're talking to Howard Green, defensive lineman for the Green Bay Packers, one of the heroes of Super Bowl 45. Now, Howard, you talked about the playoff mode that you guys were in at the end of the season, and you knew going into these playoffs you were the sixth seed, and you would have to go through. You would have to start in Philadelphia. Ultimately, you would go through Atlanta and go through Chicago. Talk about the mental toughness of this team, because they went through Philly, they went through Atlanta, and they went through Chicago. You guys got it done.
Yeah, I mean, it just was a mental toughness and playing our brand of football. That's what Coach was preaching to us the whole time. You know, we are who we are. And, you know, we have an identity of our team. We're going to do what we do. We're going to continue to do those things, and we're going to do them right. You know, we're not going to change much. We didn't change hardly anything. I mean, really, we didn't. We just kept doing what we were doing, and we did those things to the best of our abilities. We mastered those things. And I think that's what simplified it. You know, it wasn't a whole bunch of rah-rah guys and talking, and, you know, it just was a bunch of men stepping up to the challenge, answering the call, and being leaders, and just playing for each other and playing for ourselves and each other as a group. And the team is, I mean, I'm telling you, that team has a lot of love on that team. A family, it's a family oriented team, you know, from top to bottom.
Right. And Howard, you real quickly now, I want to go to the Bears game, and I want to go to Jay Cutler. You know the whole situation with him. He took himself out of the game, had an apparent knee injury, MCL injury. Mm-hmm. Were you surprised when Cutler took himself out of that game?
I didn't really know at the time. I mean, I was kind of surprised, but only the player himself knows his body, and I guess he kind of figured he could go to that point. You don't want to put your team in any jeopardy to lose the game, you know, because you're not at 100%. And a lot of times that's just being an unselfish guy. I think he was more or less looking out for his team. If he couldn't go, he didn't want to be out there to put his team in danger and hurt them from having a chance to even try to, you know, to try to win the game. So I take it as being an unselfish player. A lot of people, you know, they kind of criticize him and whatever, but if you're hurt, you can't play. I mean, it makes no sense to be out there. You can't go.
And I totally agree with you on that. I mean, if a guy says he's hurt, he's hurt. And, I mean, that's the end of the story. So that's the way I see it. Now, Howard, when you beat the Bears and you realized that you were headed to Super Bowl 45, what was your reaction?
Oh, man, I was so excited. It's a bunch of excitement and happiness, just joy. You know, you play the game for that opportunity to get to the big game, which is Super Bowl, and you wanna be in that position every year if you can. And you know, some people play 12, 13, 14, 15 years and never get there. So you have to take advantage of when you make it there. You have to fulfill and make sure you don't have any regrets and just say I left it all on the field. We won, you know, and for the guys that was on the losing end, I mean, I know it's not a good feeling, but, you know, I mean, for us, it was a tremendous feeling. It's a great honor, and we're proud to say we're champions.
Did it make it any more special that you beat your division rivals, the Chicago Bears?
Yeah, I mean, it was a sweet deal. I mean, you wouldn't want to change anything. You could write a book on that one. Just you couldn't have wrote the script any better to say it's a division opponent, a divisional rival, and we went into their place and got the victory and got out of there and went to the Super Bowl. So, I mean, it makes it that much better. You know, overall, it's just a great team effort from our team, organization, coaches, top to bottom, whoever's in that building in Green Bay, Wisconsin, it made that happen. It made all of that possible.
We're talking to Howard Green, defensive lineman, Green Bay Packers, and one of the heroes of Super Bowl 45. Now, Howard, we go to Super Bowl 45. It's in snowy Dallas. I mean, icy Dallas as well. Howard, you're from Louisiana, so you're a country boy. You're not used to this ice and cold weather.
Yeah.
What was your reaction when you saw all the snow and ice in Dallas?
Oh, man, I was expecting 60-degree weather, some shorts. I was, you know, I had a couple of shorts, pairs of shorts to wear, some T-shirts and stuff. That's what I was looking forward to, but I couldn't believe it. I was like, man, we just left, you know, out of Green Bay where it's single-digit temperatures and, you know, coming to Dallas and, hey, now we're still, you know, 15, 14-degree weather. And I was like, I guess we brought the weather with us.
and Howard, going into this game, obviously the biggest game of your life.
Yep.
Talk about the nerves, if any, as you prepare for this game.
Oh man, it was early in the week, like Friday and Thursday. I could feel myself kind of getting, nervous, anxious. That I started to feel that I was tired. Because I think I was burning too much energy just thinking, you know, and being nervous and using a lot of my energy for that reason. And I had to try to do other things to kind of refocus myself and take that off my mind and just go out and play the game. It was a nervous
right.
point, but you know, once we got there on game day, and the walk into the stadium from the buses in the locker room, that was a little nervous point. After that, I was fine. And another spot hit me right before kickoff at the singing of the national anthem. And I think after that, I just, you know, after you get the first play or two out the way, you kind of settle down and, you know, you get yourself in the, you know, this is a football game. You have to play the game and not get caught up in all of the other things that are surrounding you. You have to just stay focused on what your job is, and that was to come there and play the game and win.
Did you realize that Christina Aguilera had messed up the national anthem? Or were you too focused and ready to go?
I did in the beginning. In the beginning, I didn't really catch it. I kind of thought about it, and I was like, did she mess up a spot? You know, in the song. But then, you know, we kind of laughed about it after some of the guys. And we just, you know, laughed about it after the game was over with. And, you know, we went from there, you know. But I was so focused and locked in at that time, I really didn't catch it all at that moment.
And now, Howard, you made one of the biggest plays in Super Bowl 45. You pressured Ben Roethlisberger. You forced an interception by Nick Collins, which ultimately was returned for a touchdown. Take us through that play.
Well, we know we had them pinned deep in their own territory, and either we figured they were going to take a shot, you know, try to get out of a hole, try to make a big play. Thinking that we were thinking one, which it probably was a good idea to go into a regular formation for them and try to get us into a run defense and throw the ball over our heads, and that's what they were ultimately trying to do. I got off the ball and had a good pass rush, a good leverage on my guy, and I didn't want to get too fancy with it. I just wanted to make sure I put the guy in his lap and bull him back into the quarterback, and so, you know, ultimately I ended up getting that piece of Ben's arm, and I didn't know Nick even caught the ball. Actually, I just thought it was a, you know, deep fire ball, and you know, it was, we line up and play the next play, and when I get off the ground, I see Nick running to me, coming into the end zone with the ball. I'm like, he caught the ball. You know, I didn't even know it was an interception. Really, I swear I didn't. So it was a great play by him. Making that interception, playing the field like he always does. He's a real solid player, a real good player.
And after you made the play, what was your reaction? I mean, what was the excitement? You made arguably one of the biggest plays in Super Bowl 45. What was your excitement level at that point?
Oh, I was, you know, off the charts. It was off the charts. I mean, I was so excited and happy. Just want to celebrate with your teammates and enjoy what was going on, and I knew at that point we had a lead and our offense was going to put up more points. So, you know, you just want to go and get to the sideline and celebrate with the team and with the rest of the guys. So, you know, I made a good play, and it all was worth it. Everything that happened that day, I will never forget it.
We got to get you a dance like Raji.
Yeah. If I get my chance to get in the end zone, I got a little something worked up, so I use it next season.
And you talked about your offense, and no one hasn't played better than your quarterback, Aaron Rodgers, in these playoffs. I mean, the guy has done it, and he put up big numbers in Atlanta, big number. He put up three touchdowns against Philadelphia, and he did what he had to do against the Bears. And in this Super Bowl, Aaron Rodgers threw for over 300 yards and three touchdowns. Talk about how good Aaron Rodgers has been in these playoffs.
The guy has been good the whole year, I would say. He's a top-notch quarterback. I mean, he's in the top two, three in my book. You know what I mean? He's young. He's a strong arm, smart. He's a great teammate, great man. He was on fire. I mean, when you have a guy that's on fire like that and playing the game the way he was playing and reading defenses, and, you know, pretty much he was just tearing people up. all over. It didn't matter who we played. It didn't matter. He was just pretty much just going through defense and like it wasn't nothing to it. So he's really put his stamp in, you know, as being an elite quarterback in this league.
Right. And now, Howard, I mean, in this game, just like throughout the season, you guys lost two key guys in Charles Woodson and Donald Driver, but you still kept it going. You found a way to keep it going. Did you think, and looking back at this whole thing, do you think that it was sort of like destiny for you guys to get to this point, ultimately to win this title? Because you guys got through all these injuries, you were the sixth seed, and no matter what happened, you found a way to keep it going.
Yep, that's the sign of a true champion. I mean, never quitting, never giving up on anything. We lost Drive and we lost Wood. I mean, those were huge, huge losses. But this team has been built on, you know, the next guy step in and play. And that's the way we have a mindset. You know, the next man, we lose anybody. You know, we lost a soldier in the war. We pick him up and we go forward. And the next guy behind him, you have to stand and take that front line and play the game. And that's what we do, and that's how we look at everything. There's no one guy that's, you know, that we don't have confidence in that can't step in and play.
And Howard, you guys got off to a lead in this game, and it looked like you guys may blow this thing out. But as the game progressed, the Pittsburgh Steelers started to come back, started to get back into this game. As that was happening, was there any nervousness on your part?
No, I mean we just kind of had to refocus. You get a lead and you know you have to refocus, come back out of halftime, and Coach Capers told us on defense it was the score was 0-0, and that's what we get every week, no matter what. When you go out, if you have a lead, you go in. You know, he's like, you know, this is what he tells us every week. If they don't score, they can't win. So, and that's a mindset for us on defense. And we know that. We keep them out the end zone. They can't win the game from that point on. We are in the lead at that moment. So, we didn't get nervous. You know, nobody got pressed the panic button. We all just settled down, focused, and we went about our business as usual.
And now you guys are up 31-25. Big Ben, Ben Roethlisberger gets the ball back. A guy who has done it in the past, and his last time he played in the Super Bowl against the Cardinals, led his team down the field for a touchdown, ultimately the game-winning touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
What was the preparation of the defense before that last drive?
I don't know. I mean, the defense, we just do what we do. I'm going to just say it, put it like that. We did what we had to do. The guys in the secondary knew they had to tighten down some things and play their coverages and had to get fans rush up front. That was, you know, the biggest things of all. As long as everybody's in their coverages and in their zones or whatever and we get pressure, we know we'll be fine. You know, we never really blank on that. We know it's just, you got to go out there and play your game.
And now, Howard, I mean, you've been through a lot this season. You were cut by the Redskins, cut by the Jets, and ultimately you landed with the Green Bay Packers. What was your reaction when you saw that final pass fall incomplete and you knew that the Green Bay Packers was the champion of the Super Bowl?
Just tears of joy. I broke down. Broke down in tears and... Because I knew we had did something that a lot of men dream of doing, and it was only one team that was going to win that day, Super Bowl 45, and we did it. So I was excited, still enjoying it, celebrating a little bit with the family since I'm home now, and just going to enjoy this thing. This is forever. Nobody can take this one from me. So it's all... been a blessing for me, and I'm real honored and blessed to be here where I am right now today.
And how was that celebration at Lambeau?
Oh, it was great, man. It was cold, but It was freezing cold. I'm gonna rephrase it. It was freezing out there, but we had a good time. The stadium was packed. Packed house. All our fans were there, and we had a great time. Had trophy, you know, brought the trophy out. Everybody had a chance to get a view of that thing right up close, and had a few guys talking. It worked out well. I mean, it was a good way to come home. Good coming home party.
And did you get a chance to kiss the football, that big on the Lombardi Trophy?
Oh, yeah, I did. I had a chance to do it. I did it that night. The night of the game, I had a chance to put my hands on it a couple of times, so it was being passed around a lot. But I just had to put my hands on it at least one time, so I was able to do that. And like I said, it was all worth it, every bit of it.
And now, when does the celebration end, and when does Howard Queen prepare for 2011, if there is a 2011 season?
We're going to just enjoy this one, and I'll probably take another couple of weeks off and let my body heal up a little bit, and then I'm going to get back to work and get myself ready for the next season. Always got to keep yourself in shape.
Right. Howard, we definitely thank you for stopping by today, sir. It was greatly appreciated. Enjoy this Super Bowl season. I mean, you guys beat my beloved Philadelphia Eagles, but I'll forgive you for that. Again, enjoy this offseason, and congratulations.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Howard Green. Thanks a lot, sir.
All right. Thank you.
Howard Green. Good having Howard on the show, and congratulations to him. I mean, he made one of the biggest plays in Super Bowl 45. He made one of the biggest plays in Super Bowl 45. I mean, that pressure, the pressure that he put on Ben Roethlisberger on that play, which ultimately led to Nick Collins' interception, was a big point in that game and a big part of that football game. It was a pleasure talking to Howard, and again, we wish him nothing but the best of luck. If you have anything you want to talk about in terms of the interview with Howard Green in Super Bowl 45, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/PGAN. That's blogtalkradio.com/PGAN. And you can send email messages to the show at goforward.gan@gmail.com. That's goforward. Docan@gmail.com. I want to go back to the NBA for a second now, and I want to look at the Jerry Sloan situation. Jerry Sloan been with the Jazz for 23 years, third most wins in NBA history as a coach. I mean, he's done it all. Except win a championship. Done it all for the Utah Jazz team. And he resigned this week, Thursday actually, along with his assistant Phil Johnson, which says a lot. I mean, usually in that situation, if the head coach resigned, usually possibly the lead assistant in that particular situation will get the opportunity. But his longtime assistant resigned too. And, you know, that's something, I think. I'm not sure what it says, but it says something. It says, you know what, maybe Jerry Sloan's my guy and I'm going to go out with my guy. And that's what Phil Johnson said. He came in with Jerry, he's going out with Jerry. We know for his quotes. But maybe it's bigger than that. I mean, there was situations, there were talks that Darren Williams and Jerry Sloan had not been getting along. And apparently, according to some reports, Darren Williams called a play on the floor, which was different than the play that was called by Sloan. They had a dispute at halftime, according to some reports. And then there was a closed-door meeting, apparently, between Sloan and Kevin O'Connor, the general manager for the Utah Jazz. But I guess there's talk that possibly it was either Williams or Sloan type of situation going on in Utah. It was just odd the way that that happened. And you figure the guy did sign an extension recently of 1 year. And just like that, he was on abruptly. It's over. And then he said in his press conference on Thursday that it was time for him to move on. He had the feeling that it was time to move on. He had a long time with the organization. He also stated that he is blessed and today is a new day. And now, you know, he'll feel better and his time is up, and ultimately it's time for him to move on. It's time for him to do something else. The team's new head coach is Tyrone Corbin, a longtime assistant also with Jerry Sloan. And last night, actually, Ty Corbin debuted as the coach for the Utah Jazz, and then last night, the Utah Jazz did lose to the Phoenix Suns in that particular game. But it just was odd how this whole thing went down. It just came really, really out of nowhere. Came out of nowhere. And just like that, it was over. 23 years, it was over. So if you look at that situation with Jerry Sloan, 23 years in the game, very good coach, great coach. Did everything but win a ring. He had a couple shots. As Willie pointed out, he had a couple shots against the Chicago Bulls. But he ran into somebody. He ran into the bald one. Did a great one to one of the greatest to ever play the game with Michael Jordan. He ran into Michael Jordan two times, and both times they lost. And just like Ewing, like I said, just like Barkley, and just like a few others, Reggie Miller, just like a few others, you run into Michael Jordan, and you really essentially had no chance against Michael. And so you look at that, you look at Jerry Sloan and what he has meant to the Utah Jazz. I mean, the guy has been around forever. He's been around forever. I mean, he was the longest tenured NBA coach. 23 years in the game. He has been around forever. And the only coach in NBA history to win 1,000 games with one team. The only coach who ever have done it, who ever have won 1,000 games with one team. It's funny. He resigned. And then you had the longest tenure coach in the NFL, Jeff Fisher, who also parted ways with the Titans. So, I mean, a lot of coaches who have been around for a long time, well, two of the coaches, Jeff Fisher, longest tenure NFL coach, and now Jerry Sloan, longest tenure NBA coach, have moved on. They have moved on. But if you look at it, I mean, it's weird. And does it change the perception of Darren Williams at this point? Does Darren Williams go down as one of these guys who has another coach killer in some respect? Is Darren Williams a part of a long list of coach killers, if you will? I mean, you're just surprised how this whole thing went down. You're really just surprised how things go down. And it was funny. Karl Malone, longtime player with Jerry Sloan, great Karl Malone, came out yesterday, and he was quoted as saying, they changed the floor, meaning they changed the floor in Utah back to the old school. They changed the uniform back to the old school. Somebody tell the damn players to start playing like old school. And those were the words of Karl Malone, who made his feelings known about the situation with Jerry Sloan. And if you look at Jerry Sloan, he's a hard, tough guy. I mean, he's one of those guys, old school. Jerry Sloan is old school. He is old school. And Karl Malone also has some other interesting quotes about this situation. You know, he was saying that one thing he knows about Jerry Jones, and he was quoted as saying, "I said what I said earlier. The guy I know and love, he don't quit for nothing." And it's referring to Jerry Sloan. Jerry Sloan, according to Karl Malone, does not quit. He's not a quitter. But he decided to move on this time. Not saying he quit, but he decided to move on. He decided that it was time for him to move on. And ultimately, he has moved on. And ultimately, Jerry Sloan resigns, and Tyrone Corbin has taken over as the head coach of the Utah Jazz. As of now. Shocking. 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 I want to go back to the Super Bowl now. And again, you look at Super Bowl week in Dallas. It was all you heard coming out of Dallas. Was the weather, the iciness, if you will, the whole situation in Dallas, the iciness, the snow, in normally sunny, warm Dallas. It was basically like the East Coast. It was basically like the East Coast. Weather wasn't great in Dallas. The weather was not great in Dallas. And a lot of people, talked about how that weather kind of marred the Super Bowl and Super Bowl week. Kind of marred Super Bowl week. And, you know, then you have the situation with these fans, 400 fans who have paid for a seat, and ultimately those fans were left out. They were left out of Super Bowl 45. Fans who were Steelers fans who were Packers fans were not able, they were unable to watch the Super Bowl. And the NFL has come out and says, you know, they will try to take care of these people. There's talks that they were offered them three times the value of their ticket at roughly around $2,400 and an opportunity. There was talk of that or the opportunity to attend a Super Bowl of their choice with all the hotel accommodations and things of that nature. And now there's the talk that these guys have filed, some of the fans who were left out, have filed a lawsuit against the NFL. And you know that the NFL at this point will probably do something in terms of some kind of settlement with these fans. I mean, if you look at it right now, the NFL does look bad in this situation. The NFL does look bad in this situation. For the simple fact is you had people who paid money, their hard-earned money in this rough economy. These people shelled out the money to watch Super Bowl 45, to be a part of the experience. And guess what? They were turned away. They were turned away. Fans of the Green Bay Packers, fans of the Pittsburgh Steelers, turned away because there were no seats or nothing, nowhere for them to be in Cowboys Stadium. Nowhere to be. But they have filed a federal lawsuit on Tuesday. They filed it. It's crazy. I mean, it was 1,250 temporary seats that they were deemed unsafe, but they were put in the Cowboys Stadium. And the league did eventually find seats for 850 of those people. But 400 people were forced to watch from standing room only location. That's bad. That's just bad. Bad. Standing room only. That's bad. That's tough. And I said they were turned away. They actually were given the option of standing room only seats. Who would want to watch the game? Especially a game that you pay for, standing up for 3 long hours, standing up. That's tough. That is tough. Standing up. That's why I just watched the Super Bowl from my house. In the luxury of my own home, on my couch. I'm not paying $800 or more to watch the Super Bowl. Or I can watch it in my own home, watch all the replays, have somebody dictate to me what's going on in the game, meaning the announcers, while I just sit back, eat some chips, drink a soda or two, and just watch the game. In the comfort of my own home, in the warmth of my own home. Talk about pleasure. That is pleasure. And to me, that's a lot better than going to the Super Bowl and being like some of these 400 people who are left standing and watching. Not a nice way to enjoy the Super Bowl. Not a nice way to enjoy the Super Bowl. Seatless. Not a nice way to enjoy the Super Bowl. But we'll see what the NFL does. I mean, again, a lawsuit has been filed, but you would think, and obviously you believe the NFL probably will solve this thing. I don't honestly see this thing going to court. I mean, it's not a good look for the NFL. You would almost think they would find a way. They would find a way to make sure that that whole situation will get resolved and that these people will receive necessary compensation that they rightly deserve. And I think it'll happen. I definitely think it'll happen. And I want to come out and talk about some of the comments made by Chicago White Sox pitcher Mark Burley in reference to Michael Vick. And Burley was quoted as saying, and Burley is a big-time animal rights activist. He was quoted as saying, he had a great year meeting Michael Vick and a great comeback, but there were times where we watched the game. And I know it's bad to say, but there were times where we hoped he gets hurt. Everything you have done to these dogs, something bad needs to happen to these guys. Well, Mark Burley, number one, I'm not going to wish bad on others, because ultimately the bad that you wish on others may happen to you. So, A, it's not bad. It's not good to wish bad on others. So that's A, where you're wrong. You don't wish bad on others. That's the bottom line. You don't do that. You just don't do that. B, Michael Vick, say what you will, lost a lot in this situation. Lost a lot of money. And the guy owes a lot of people a lot of money. So, in terms of you wishing something bad would happen to him, I mean, come on, what else do you want from the guy? He paid his price and paid his debt to society. That's B. C, he lost all his money. Lost everything. He lost everything. In our society, I mean, you know, we're a society of second chances. No matter what you do, I mean, you can't just do anything, but, you know, this side of murder, and even murderers and everybody there, you get second chances. This is a society of second chances. Unless the crime is so horrific that you're not deserving of a second chance, meaning death penalty or life imprisonment. But this is a society that's about second chances. And granted, what Michael Vick did to those dogs weren't nice. Wasn't good. I can't defend it. But he pays his debt to society. What more do you want from the guy? He has paid his debt to society. And there's nothing else to really say at that point. He's paid his debt to society. And as far as I'm concerned, because of that, you have to let it go. You may not like the guy. You may hate the guy even. But you don't wish bad on the guy. You don't wish bad on the guy. Because like I said before, the bad that you wish on others may be the bad that happens to you. So be careful. Be careful wishing bad on others. And Mark Burley is definitely wrong for coming out and saying those things and those comments, because you just never know in life what you may encounter. You never know the situation you may encounter. You just never know. Yes, things may be sweet for you now, but they may not be sweet for you tomorrow. They may be sweet today, but they may be a little sour tomorrow. So you never know. You never know what could happen. You never know. And with that being said, and with that whole situation, with those comments there, I think they're a little irresponsible. And if he does feel that way, probably was best to leave it to yourself. Leave those comments to yourself. Leave them to yourself. Just leave them to yourself. Maybe tell your wife or something, but you don't tell the world. You don't tell the world that you wish sometimes that Michael Vick would get hurt. You wish. You don't do that. You don't do that. That's just something you just don't do. You don't do that. But again, it's just an unfortunate. Again, what Michael Vick did was wrong. Fighting dogs, killing dogs, whatever he did with the dogs was wrong. But it shouldn't disqualify him from ever making a living again in life. It shouldn't disqualify from him for getting an opportunity. He shouldn't be disqualified of getting another opportunity or getting another job because of that situation. It was wrong. But in our society, we have laws. You break them, we have prisons for you. Guess what? Michael Vick broke the law. He went to prison. He paid his debt to society in prison. He's out. And now he's making a living for himself. He's making the most of his opportunity. And many argue, has he changed? I don't know. I will say so far, so good. So far, so good. And you'll never know if he changed. I mean, you'll never know. All over time, you'll know. But as of today, I mean, in terms of the privacy of his own home, we don't know what goes on there. We don't know. But in terms of what we have seen so far, the man looks like a changed man. He looks a guy who is deserving and deserved that opportunity. Another opportunity for Michael Vick, and he is making the best of that opportunity. He is making the best of the opportunity. And I hope, as an Eagle fan, personally, that he continues to make the most of his opportunity, and continues to play well, and as a Philadelphia Eagles fan, ultimately, lead my Philadelphia Eagles to an NFL title, an NFL championship. So, Mike Vick, continue doing what you're doing. Continue to stay on the right path. And ultimately, bring my Philadelphia Eagles a championship title. Please, please, please bring my Eagles a championship title. And some sad news to report last night from the NFL. Washington Redskins kick returner Brandon Banks was injured last night outside the nightclub in Washington, D.C. Apparently, they were superficial wounds. And apparently, it happened at around 3 o'clock this morning. He was ultimately released from the hospital this afternoon. Apparently, there was a verbal argument between Banks and another man. And apparently, that led to the stabbing of Brandon Banks. But again, superficial wounds. And again, he has been released from the hospital. So that is good news. And hopefully, if you're Brandon Banks, you recover quickly and you get back to it. I mean, Brandon Banks is a guy, a very small guy, actually. But a guy, again, who's had a decent year for the Redskins in terms of the kick return game and the punt return game. And he played well. And over 1,000 yards and a touchdown as a kick returner for the Redskins. But you wish him nothing but the best of luck and hope everything works out with that situation and another incident in the club, not for Banks, but for an athlete in general. And wise men always said nothing good happens after 12 a.m. And Banks was out 3 o'clock in the morning. And the club, I mean, again, joined the fruits of his labor. And unfortunately, it didn't happen. But again, you hope the person who did it gets caught. You hope and you have to be happy that Brandon Banks was released from the hospital this afternoon. And the other person who was who also got stabbed in that particular incident is said to be in critical condition in a Washington, D.C. hospital. But again, the suspect was taken into custody by police. So we'll see what happens with that situation. We'll see what happens with Brandon Banks. But good news on his situation. He is out of the hospital. But the other person involved in the situation, in the stabbing, is still in the hospital at this time. And so our prayers and our thoughts are with him at this time. Another 5 minutes left in the show. Jam-packed show, a very enjoyable show, as we were joined by 2011 Hall of Fame Finals Willie Rose, and as we were joined by Howard Green, a guy who made one of the biggest plays in Super Bowl 45 and ultimately led to the Green Bay Packers winning Super Bowl 45 and the Green Bay Packers ultimately being the champ, being the 2010 champion in the National Football League. And with Aaron Rodgers now, he's definitely a guy who, as we speak right now, is one of the best quarterbacks in football. Top five, definitely, in terms of quarterback play in the National Football League. I mean, he's a guy who's done it, who's really getting it done. He's just getting it done. And he got it done in these playoffs. And I talked about how tough this Green Bay Packers team was. I mean, you go into Philadelphia, tough place to win, and you get it done. Tremont Williams, big-time interception, which led to the Packers winning that game. You go into Atlanta, Matty Ice and those boys, a Falcons team that gets it done at home, a Falcons team which was the number one team in the playoffs, a Falcons team that many believe would make it to the Super Bowl. But guess what? Green Bay Packers went into Orlando, went to a team that only lost, the Falcons only lost once at home. They only lost one time at home, 7-1, in the Georgia Dome, at the Georgia Dome. And guess what? Green Bay Packers go there and they get it done. And then they go to Chicago. Nemesis, the Chicago Bears. A place that they lost in the regular season. They lost in Chicago in the regular season. And guess what? They found a way to get it done. In Chicago, they found a way to get it done. And that's a testament to the player Aaron Rodgers. That's a testament to the defense, Clay Matthews Jr., Charles Woodson, and head coach Mike McCarthy. That's a testament to those guys. And if you looked at this team, you lose to Michael Finley. You lose one. You lose Nick Barnett. You lose Woodson in the Super Bowl. You lose Driver in the Super Bowl. And guess what? You don't miss a beat. You keep this thing going. And ultimately, you win Super Bowl 45. Kudos to Mike McCarthy. Kudos to Aaron Rodgers. Kudos to Howard Green, a guy who was on the show today and a guy who was cut by the Redskins, cut by the Jets, but epitomizes what this Green Bay team was about. They just never quit. And Howard Green was a replacement. He came in, replaced who he needed to replace, did what he needed to do in Super Bowl 45 for the Green Bay Packers. So give the Green Bay Packers a lot of credit. Dom Capers, who came in, with defense coordinator for the Green Bay Packers, who turned things around for that defense. Give this team a lot of credit. The Green Bay Packers, your 2010 Super Bowl champions. Give them a lot of credit. And a young team there, the team that will be around for a while, especially for Aaron Rodgers as their quarterback. We want to thank Willie Rowe for stopping by. Willie, again, was a contributor to our show throughout this NFL season. And Willie was a 2011 Hall of Fame finalist. And Willie didn't make it this year, but he'll definitely get in. It's just a matter of time. It's just a matter of when it will happen. But we also want to thank Howard Green, defensive lineman for the Green Bay Packers, who made the big play in Super Bowl 45, which led to Nick Collins' interception, and ultimately which led to the Green Bay Packers winning Super Bowl 45. You can listen to this show's and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/pecan. That's blogtalkradio.com/pecan, where you can listen to this show and other shows. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at GoForIt. And make sure you follow the show on Twitter at GoForIt. This is Paul Gann. Hope you enjoyed it. See you later.